Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
I'm Adam Madison, and this is the greatest television show ever. And this is a podcast, and it's called the Munchies Podcast, and I'm on it. I got a show called Dead Set on Life. I'm an OG Munchie motherfucker. We got some burger videos. You got the squad fried chicken. You got fucking Keep Canada. You got a bunch of stuff out there. I'm giving you content. Now you can hear me talk about it. Love you guys. Stay tuned. We got Halen Hollyman up into this piece and Phil, fucking sound guy. Way to go, Dick Comb. Perfect. Bye. Listen shortly.
God bless America, you motherfuckers. Let's go.
Just walking through the Munchies, but you never know who you're gonna run into in the Munchies 10 sketch. It's a crazy ensemble of people.
Great. Who are you and what are you doing here?
I'm Adam Atherton. I'm here eating a cookie and I got a show called Dead Set on Life with Viceland.
How's that cookie?
It's good. People are saying that it was left out on the counter at the bar in the Vice Lounge. Is that what you guys call it? The Vice Lounge?
Yeah.
Yeah. On Friday. It's Monday. It's still a good cookie. So whoever left that tray of cookies out there, thank you.
So Dead Set on Life, new season.
Wow. Powerful. Awe-inspiring. I've made the show better. The camera guys are better. The sound guys better. Still the same guys, but we've just gotten better. Way more food descriptions on this season. People, the biggest thing with food television is people can't eat the television. So they really need hosts to really describe food. You need to be a thesaurus of words. And you know, I'm just out there trying to describe food for people. Really putting in the hard work. I did my best. I made the best show that I think I could, you know? I don't know about the editing. Like, the show that you see, I don't know. That's in Viceland's control. But the show that I did on the camera, gold. I put my heart on my sleeve. I'm out there fighting the good fight, trying to meet people that are interesting and that have built this foundation of food around themselves and that live in that little food house. And then they're looking around and I'm like, what's going on here at this food house? This little foundation, this beautiful thing you've built. And then we just open up these little doors and walk around and we get to see what's in this room. Oh, this is nice. It smells good in here. And then you hang out in that room for a little bit. And then you go to the other room and you see a little bit of different sides of people. And I think that this show is just getting, and it's a weird thing to say, but I think it's, you know, I've never made television before. And, you know, we made 3 seasons in the last year and a half. And I think it's just about, I'm maybe getting better on television or I'm more, not on television, but like in front of cameras. And I think we're trying to make it funnier, more intelligent, more about food, less maybe about me with my shirt off running around. And it's about finding that real balance. And I think we've, in this season, kind of found that balance.
For those who haven't watched, explain why it's called Dead Set on Life.
The show is called Dead Set on Life. People may not understand what this means or, you know, why did the Beatles call the White Album the White Album? I don't know. Maybe hit up VH1 for that. But Dead Set on Life is... I'll give you the short story long. So there's a band called Husker Du. Me and my friend loved Husker Du. We wanted to open up a bar called Dead Set on Destruction. On Canny Apple Grey, they have a song called Dead Set on Destruction. It's a very fucking good song. We wanted to open a bar called Dead Set on Destruction. And we wanted to make it the gnarliest fucking bar ever. We wanted it to be very, like, drug heavy or drug friendly. Very drug friendly. Lots of booze. Serve, like, maybe one can of beer and, like, only whiskey. Or, like, it's a stupid thing. We talked about it mostly high on Coke. So, It was like one of those kind of things. We wanted to make something that was like the full experience of like a dive. Like just pure sadness kind of thing. And so when I had my heart attack from using drugs, one of my good friends wrote me a gift card when I was in the hospital, and they brought it and they said, I guess you won't be opening up Dead Set on Destruction. Why don't you do something about like Dead Set on Life? And then that my other buddy, like Liam, he is in the band. He wrote the theme song, or his band wrote the theme song, for their album. They have an album called Dead Set on Living, the band Cancer Bats. And so they had that album came out. What is it? I had my heart attack almost five and a half years ago. So when that album came out about, I guess, 4.5, 5 years ago. When I was trying to think of how to, I was like, I don't want just a fucking stupid name. Like, I don't want Maddie Eats, or like, you know, like, it's really tough to figure out, and it's really dangerous to like miscall, like, you can't rename your fucking show. And like, once it's there, it has to be like, it has to stand out. And I think that I took an approach where I was like, yo, treat it like an album, treat it like a band. Like, what is fucking, you know, what is fucking Foo Foo Fighters, or fucking, what is fucking Nirvana, or like, what is, you know, like, what are these bands? Like, what does it matter? Almost, you know, like, I think it's cool. It's got an acronym, DSOL, like, it works. It sounds good, Dead Set on Life. You know, people can call it Dead Set or DSOL. And I liked it. I was just like, yo, this is like treated like a fucking album. And that's why I called, you know, I put that in the hat. And obviously it got picked because it's genius. And I wanted a name that I could back 100%. You know, I wanted to be like, yo, this is my fucking show. This is what I'm doing. I'm fucking me. And this is a personal thing, and it's real. And it's like, can't fucking love it or hate it. It's fucking me. So I think that's why I called the show Dead Set on Life.
Take me back. So your life has changed dramatically.
Dramastically.
Since you had the heart attack. Take me back to that year right before you had your heart attack. What was your
year before? Oh, yeah. No one asked that. Yeah. There you go. No one really asked that. The year before my heart attack, I was on my way to killing myself. I was using more drugs than I've ever used. So, yeah, I think the heart attack was, you know, I was 29. I was a chef at a, you know, pretty successful restaurant. I used to have a massive ego. Now I'm kind of just like, the biggest thing that I think that I have changed by working on myself is that I've like reduced my ego. And before, I didn't have any fucking filters. I was the fucking party guy. I was the chef that everyone to party with, or could fucking party harder than anybody, or party more, or do whatever. Or I would want to sniff more coke than you, or do more MDMA than you, or mushrooms, or fucking everything. And I loved doing drugs. I loved doing drugs, and I loved cooking. And there was the two, I still, to this day, it's like a relationship. Like, I still think about it often. I still miss it, you know. But the year before, it was right after we opened Parts and Labor. Parts and Labor was very busy, very crazy. The staff were, like, I got no regrets. Like, it was fucking Animal House. Like, the staff, everything was, like, fucking, people hated us. People came to our restaurant and were like, what the fuck is this place? It's, because it's big, it's loud, it's fucking, we were running around there like fucking, like children, man. We were running around there like our parents left. Like, every day was like your parents left and you got a fucking unlimited amount of booze. And like, fuck, every friend's your drug dealer. You know, like, it was bananas for about 3.5 years. It was, it was crazy every day. Like, every day we'd have, I don't know, 40, 50 people stay there till 7 a.m. down in the basement. You know, like, at least 4 or 5 nights a week. Like, we would just go down in the basement where we have shows and everything, and we would just hang out down there and fucking party. There's no windows. We'd lock all the doors, and you could fuck it. It was like a casino. And you'd walk out, and it'd be 7 a.m., 8 a.m. I've, you know, back then, like, I've spent, I don't know, like, 48 hours in that building, you know? Like, I would just, like, sleep downstairs, go upstairs, and fucking kind of work, and then party again, and then kind of go home at 8 a.m. the next day, you know? And then everyone started, like, after my heart attack, it kind of chilled things out. But before, I was just, like, the heart attack was just, like, nobody has a heart attack. Nobody, or people do. A lot of people have OD. Like, people do OD, but you never think it's going to be you or your friend or fucking anything. And so there was no ceiling. There was no ceiling at our restaurant. And it was just crazy. And so when my opening Chef de Cuisine, when we opened, like, still to this day, like, one of my best friends, Matt DeMille, who's gone on and done amazing, amazing stuff, he left after a year because he's kind of like a straight man. And he was just like, he got an opportunity. Somebody came to him and asked if he wanted to be a chef at this nice little Italian restaurant. And he was like, see you later. You know, he's like, I can't deal with this. Like, because he had a kid in his first year. So he was really mature, really good chef, really good friend of mine. And it really hurt when he left. Because I knew why he left. He left because he got a fucking... He was over it. Like, 1 year of being not on the... Like, if you're not on the party train and you're watching and still have to run a fucking company, like, you fucking have resentments and you have... you know, you fucking hate them. And, you know, I feel... To this day, I still feel really bad about that. Like, putting my friend through something like that. But we're... Still to this day, we just laugh about it now. And it was just, like, chaos. It was, like, literally just chaos. Like, I was in a crazy place. Me and Trish were, like, up and down. She, like... We were just all over the place. And I was in a... I was just riding everything. Like, oh, cool, we got a good review. Sweet, let's party. Oh, shit, we got a bad review. Let's party. Oh, fuck. This band, like, you know, like, Parts and Labor used to be this cool fucking spot. Like, you know, like, Mac DeMarco would play there. Ty Vec, fucking, you know, Ty Siegel. Like, we used to have, like, fucking gnarly parties there. And, like, the like, even Maddie Fest, where I'd throw, like, festivals for my own birthday. And, like, we would have 3-day Maddie Fests. And it would be 3 days. And, like, I would fly my friends' bands in to play. And, like, I would be blacked out by midnight. You know, I remember one weekend I brought my favorite friend, my best friend's band I used to tour with, called Lady Hawk. We flew them out from Vancouver. I don't remember them playing. They played 3 nights in a row, like, headline. And I don't remember seeing them, you know, And it's just like shit like that freaks me out when I think about that kind of stuff. But that's where I was at. Like, I would be the guy who would, like, smash stuff. I would be the dude who would smash a light or break something or fucking grab something and break, like. You know, we had a Super Bowl party one time, and I had to comp a whole table's thing because I, like, just started breaking beer bottles on a table next to them and just, like, splashed this whole table with broken beer bottles. And, like, I just, like, was drunk, and I was like, comp their whole table. Sorry about that. Fuck off. Fucking comp their whole table. And it was like, and then, like, the manager came up. It was like, it's $700. And I was like, fuck, who gives a fuck? I just sprayed them with glass and beer and, like, fucking comp them. Like, that's what I was like, you know? Like, that's an insane thing. Like, that's not good business.
Well, I mean, tell me about, when was the moment for you that you were like, all right, things are changing?
After my heart attack, but not even really. Like, it was 2 years after my heart attack that I stopped drinking and doing drugs. So, like, that's the thing. Like, I stopped for about 3 months after my heart attack. Because I was, like, back to work 10 days. Like, I was in the hospital for 5 days. I was home for 5 days. Like, we were starting, we just started our catering company. We were talking about doing the burger shop thing. The Dog and Bear opened, reopened, like, because it used to be a nightclub called The Social. So, like, there was all this stuff kind of going on. And I was kind of, like, in the middle of all of it, just, like, drowning. And so I didn't drink for 3 months. And then all of a sudden it was like, okay, I'm just going to drink beer. I'm not going to drink whiskey. I'm not going to drink vodka. I'm not going to drink fucking rum. I'm just going to drink beer. And then all of a sudden I'd have a few shots. And then that's when I realized that I was like an addict. Because I never questioned it before. I never ever once was like, I need to go rehab. I need to, fuck man, I'm fucking this up. Like my ego is crazy. And I'm like, never once did I second like that I wasn't normal. Or that I wasn't like in control. I never did. I like until like the day I stopped, like I thought I was in control. And so so after the 3 weeks, so I started setting these kind of different rules, and then I would break them every time. And then I would, you know, I'm really lucky because a lot of my drug dealer friends cut me off. Like I couldn't get drugs from them. Like they were my friend. They were like, I was friends with a lot. I've been buying drugs from for years. And I would get cut off from a drug dealer, and then I'd be like, fuck you. And then I'd go to a different bar where no one knows me. And then I'd fucking almost get in a fight because I'd be in a bar just asking people who sells coke or something stupid. Like, you know, just being like an idiot, like an absolute idiot. And so then I just started like doing stuff like that. And then that's when shit got kind of sour because all my friends were like getting really worried because I was like full blown again. And I had to hide it from Trish. And she would be like, what the fuck? I found, like, these baggies. What the fuck are you doing? I'm like, they're not mine. They're my friends. Oh, how did I get in there? I'm, like, an amazing manipulator. And, you know, God bless Trisha. Man, she's a fucking saint. She's the fucking best. But, you know, I started, like, lying. Like, I never lied before. Like, I didn't care if anyone knew that I did coke. I didn't care if anyone... Oh, what? I do coke. Wow! What are you? Like, if you were to, like... I'd be at a house party, and I'd, like, just pour a bag of coke out on a table and be like, what, I'm gonna go in the bathroom? Like, this, what, are you a cop? Like, what are you fucking talking about? Like, we're gonna do coke here. This is a house party. Are you mental? And that was my mentality. And, yeah, the very last time that I, you know, I stopped, like, the, sorry, the very last time that I drank was with Lee Tieran, and he was visiting. We were doing a Northern Chefs Alliance at Buca in Toronto, and I was hosting, like, Lee stayed at my apartment, and we were hanging out for a week, and we never met before, and we just got on, and we were just partying so hard together. And having such a great time. And I remember it was a Friday night. And I just didn't go to work that day. You know? I just didn't go to work. And I showed up at like 9 o'clock mid-service. Drunk as fuck with like Lee. And some of the owners were sitting at one of the chef's tables. And was just like, yeah, you don't know? Friday night? You don't need to, like, work. You don't need to be, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, you're fucking hammered. All like, it was kind of like, just everyone was kind of, I was the last one at the party with my restaurant guys. You know, like, everyone was kind of chilled out. Like, everyone had partied and everyone was partiers. But, like, everyone, you know, I was the youngest out of everyone. So it was just, like, kind of, not blaming, like, age, but I was the youngest. And, like, these dudes, you know, they're in their, like, later 30s, early 40s. And they kind of like, you know, 4 years of partying that hard at Parts and Labor, I think everyone was kind of over it. The staff kind of turned over. It was all new staff and there was a lot less drugs and all that kind of shit. And everyone was trying to like clean up and make Parts and Labor a sustainable restaurant, not just like some hype spot. And I was like, I showed up and Richard just came up to me and he was like, you're done. Like not even like took me aside. He just like walked up to me and like, he was like, you're fucking done. And I kind of looked at him as I, whatever. And 2 minutes later, my drug dealer walks in, gives me bags of coke in front of him. And, you know, I do a fucking rip back in the dish pit. And then he just like looked at me and like shook his head and like walked out the door, left his people that he was with. And Lee was like, is everything okay? Like, Lee was like, what's going on here? Like, what's happening? I'm like, it's fine. Like, you know, like, it's everything's fine. It's cool. Don't worry. Like, we're going to drink here all night and everything's great. I like, you know? And then that was like Friday night and then Sunday. And then I was hungover as fuck. We did the event. I didn't even drink. We did the Northern Chefs Alliance thing with, like, you know, a bunch of amazing chefs from Canada and the U.S. And we did this amazing dinner. And then I went home and slept. And then on Sunday, I got a call. Hey, can you meet me here? And then there was an intervention. And then it was small. It was three of my friends and Richard, who's my friend. I love Richard, you know, I love everyone in that room. And we just talked for a few hours. And then the next day, one of my friends who was there, he went to meetings, and then he was like, and then I went to a meeting, and, you know, that's like 3.5 years ago now, and my life has completely changed. You know, I'm a better chef. Not that I'm at the restaurant more, but I'm a better chef. I'm a better person. I'm just in a better place, and I'm actually in control. I'm very manageable. I can. If somebody gives me an opportunity, I can think about it and maybe give a correct answer. Like, you know, I can do something with an opportunity now. Rather, before, I'd just be like, fuck it. I'm not a chef. I'm just going to be at the restaurant. And, you know, like, I think that life is amazing and it's given me such an opportunity. And, like, now it's like, not that I don't, like, I've said it before, but I don't care if anybody never calls me a chef again. I'm Maddie, man. I'm just like, I'm fucking Maddie. I got restaurants. I got a TV show. I got fucking my family. Like, I'm cool, man. And it's all because of, like, it's because of opportunity. It's, you know, I was done with alcohol and drugs, and I was like, let's focus on other shit. And I've put that energy, the same energy that I would put and the same excitement I would put into drugs and alcohol, I've put into life. And being like, I'm not a millionaire. My parents aren't a millionaire. My wife's parents aren't millionaires. So who's going to pay for all the shit I want to do? I want to be successful. I want to buy a cottage. I want my kids to have Christmas every year. I want to fucking be able to eat $300 worth of sushi if I want. I want to be able to buy a homeless guy a pack of smokes. You know, like, it's chill. Like, I want to be able to take opportunities and make them really cool. And just have a good time and live life in a different way. Like, I want to open up restaurants. I want to, like, there's nothing that makes me happier than going into other people's restaurants and, you know, and I want to open restaurants. I want to be a chef. I want to, you know, my biggest goal is to open up another restaurant, hopefully one day soon, and cook again. You know, take some time off from TV stuff. And I've done this stuff for kind of like the last like 2 years. And now I'm like, okay, this is cool. Traveling is a lot, and it's a lot to be away from the family and all this kind of shit. But, like, I'd like to really get back into the kitchen and really push myself and try to do something amazing. you know, and keep doing television and then try to, you know, build it up to a next step and be like, how can I do this? How can I take everything now that I kind of have things, how can I take these things and, like, let them grow now? Cause it's not just like, it's so funny. It's such a marathon. It's not a sprint. And it's like, you're like, you collect these things. You're like, okay, I got it. Oh, sick. I have, like, I did a Munchies video. Sick. And then, like, what did I do with it? I was like, I want to do another one. Yo, let me do something else. Let's do a stupid show. Let's do hangover cures. Let's do something. And then all of a sudden, it's like I want stuff. I'm an addict. I want what you don't have or what you have, or I want everything. So it's just like, how do I have these things? And how do, now that I'm kind of like in the arena, how do I take them and make it have longevity, have integrity, have, you know, How do I make a show that I think is fucking great? Keep working at it, you know? Like, I think, like, that's really cool. How do I keep the restaurants, you know, sustainable, interesting? Are people coming back, or are people just coming to see if I'm there and take a fucking photo? Or are people coming for food? Most of the time, people are coming for a cheeseburger and a photo, but I'm never there. So it's like, people, like, you know, like, it's a funny fucking thing, but it's like, how do I make things that are real? And how do I turn this stuff into stuff that I'm really proud of? And how do I turn this into stuff that makes money and is sustainable? And because it's all right now, like, the world's so ADD right now, it's like, is there going to be another guy that comes around and starts yelling and swearing and fucking doing stuff? Like, I don't know. I haven't seen anybody do what I'm doing yet, you know? Like, in the, like, yelly, sweary, fucking layman's terms cooking shit, you know?
Well, I mean, in knowing you and kind of watching you explode into this TV persona, something that we've traveled together here and there in Copenhagen, etc., Toronto, etc. And something that I find both creepy and amazing is whenever you post a picture where you're eating.
Yeah.
Whenever I've been eating with you, there's always like some young chef or someone who's a fan who like races down to come meet you.
Yeah.
And like, we were eating together here in New York one time, there was that young chef came racing up to you. And
you're starting
what
to
did
that.
He say?
He just wanted to, I forget, he wanted to meet me. I don't know, he just wanted to, people just want to say hi. It's weird. It's not weird, but it's like, I just, social media is just crazy. Like, people have left, some dude left a fucking business card on my windshield parked in front of my house saying, this may be creepy, but I had a really delicious meal at Parts and Labor. I hope this is your truck. And
that's
I'm
really
just
creepy.
And that's really creepy, but it's like, I've put up a picture of my truck. I put myself so far out there on Instagram and social media and shit, like, but it's like, it's crazy that people are so insane to do stuff. Like, I was eating at a restaurant in Montreal and I posted a photo of the menu cuz I like, my shit's all real time. Like, I really don't like if I'm somewhere, I'll post about it. Like, I would never take a photo of something and then the next day post about it. Unless I was, like, saying something stupid about it or something, you know? But I would never, like, my shit is, like, real time. So, I'm kind of explaining how to find me. So, but people do that. Like, I was eating at a restaurant, and I'm, like, sitting there at this nice this restaurant called Le Musso in Montreal. It's a tasting menu spot. And I'm sitting down, and some kid just, like, side saddles me. And I thought he was, like, a server or something. And I was just like, like, what's up, dude? Like, right up close. What, like, what's going on? I got my water. Like, I'm cool. And he's like, I saw that you posted. You're here. And I was just like, oh, you're... Well, nice to meet you. Like, you instantly just have to be like, what do you do? Like, what do you do? Like, do you tell him to fuck off? Do you tell him... Like, he's a fan. He's stoked. He found me. Like, way to go, buddy. Like, but it's just like, he just walked right in the restaurant, too. Like, he didn't even, like... Like, a server didn't, like, bring him in. He didn't go to the host. Like, he just, like, bolted through this restaurant and came right up to my table. And it was just, like, is that... And they just want the pick. And it's just, like, it's so crazy. And I'm just, like, the energy that I... Like, if I was to be, like, I've never told anyone to fuck off. Like, I was one time in a Costco, and I got my kid and a fucking baby Bjorn. And some guy just, like, comes up. He's, like, sweating, him and his wife, just, like, crazy to see me. And it's like, that's cool. Like, why is that not cool? That's, you know, like, that person's stoked. That person is stoked. So why would I bring that down? And for me to just take a second and all they want is a fucking stupid photo. So who gives a fuck? Like, I know that some people are like, it is intense. Like, and I'm just this new thing. And it's like, I can't imagine being on television for fucking 10, 15 years or like 5 years or, you know, like, and these people like Jerry Seinfeld or like, you know, these people that are like, no, like they're bigger than Jesus, you know, like, or just as big as fucking Jesus, you know? And like, it's not annoying. Like, it is brutal. My wife hates it. Like, we want to move, you know, like Trish is like, everyone knows we're like, this is every time but it's crazy. Like, every time we walk outside of the house, people are like, you live here? And you're like, what's up, man? Like, what do you say? Like, Yeah, man, what's up? Do you want to come over and check out my toys? Like, what are you fucking, what are you doing, man? Like, who acts like, I've never done that to anyone. Like, if I wanted a photo, like, if I ever wanted a photo, is like, I do it to chefs, you know? Like, I'm obviously the selfie guy. I do it to people, but it's in funny situations. Like, when I take selfies, you know, like, fucking Leo DiCaprio.
I was going to say Leo. Yeah.
Leo. Leo's the biggest. I feel like Leo's the, but I was in a circle, like, I don't know if I should even talk about this, really, but, you know, like, I was in St. Bart's, and, like, you know, and Shane and Saroosh and a bunch of people were in St. Bart's, and we were at this party. It's like Rick Rubin, Chris Rock, Leo DiCaprio, fucking Jimmy Buffett, and we're all in this, like, I'm, like, standing in a circle.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Circled fucking watching Leo DiCaprio vape, and I'm just like, yo, man, you're cool in, like, Gilbert Grapes. And he was just, like, laughed. And then, like, you know, like, you gotta give something. And I feel like, I find it really crazy because people don't even, like, I'm always like, if they're coming up to me, they know my name. But I'm always like, hey, what's up, man? I'm Maddie. Like, what's your name? Like, what's up? And they're always like, like, they always seem like, it's crazy because they only want the thing. And that's the thing that's kind of bumming me out now, because it's like, it's so relevant, like, it's so, like, they don't even give a fuck. They just want the thing. And it's just the kind of, that's the bummer, I think. It's like, yo, what's up? Like, how are you doing? Or, because there's times when it's like the sweetest things, the best things. When I was in Perth, and this fucking kid came up to me, and it almost made me want to, like, cry. And he was like, I used to be like 400 pounds, and just the way that you live your life, like, made me lose, I've lost over 150 pounds. And he didn't even ask for a picture. And he just wanted to share that story. And I'm like, why would I inspire you to lose? I'm like, fatter than I've ever been. And I'm like, fucking, I'm like, okay, that's amazing that whatever you took from my life, like, maybe because I stopped doing drugs, like, I'm like, whatever people took. But that kid took something and has, like, it has changed his life. And, like, that's so sick. And I was just like, yo, man, that's cool. Like, we, like, hugged, and it was, like, super chill. And then he just, like, he was like, I'm good. And I was like, now that's an interaction. Like, didn't ask for the pic and wanted a connection. And, like, we hugged, and it was, like, tight, and it was fucking, and that kid inspired me, you know?
Well, and I remember, I mean, when we were at Attaboy together, I remember the young chef that came up to you was like, hey, I'm actually, like, a recovering addict, and you really inspired me.
Oh, really?
And,
that's cool.
Yeah, and, like, you know, my question to you is, why, having worked in the restaurant industry myself, partying, drinking, etc., it's part of the culture a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Like, why do you think addiction in the restaurant industry happen?
I think it most, because it's not easy. It's flies to shit. What business can I work at where I drink all day? What business is it where I can, like, cook all day and I get rewarded at the end of the shift with a beer? Like, what business model is it that I should drink the best wines in the world and share them with these people? And, like, if I sell a fucking $500 bottle of fucking Brunello or some bullshit fucking to this table, they're going to give me maybe a glass, you know? And you're a like, we set the tone. Like, a really good restaurant, the team sets the tone and creates the vibe, and then those people are a part of that play and a part of that environment. And sometimes the team, you know, you turn into your own, you create the monster. And every single night you got to be in that environment. Every single night after the shift, you sit around, you drink, and you bitch, and you smoke smokes, and you talk about tips, or talk about your fucking, the cook who fucked up at your table, or the cooks are talking about the fucking front of house, or, you know, like, and they're talking about it together, and they're fucking bitching, and it's like, it's like camaraderie. It's like they're hard days. It's romantic, you know. It's a lot of, you know, I think it's just a lot of resentments too. Like back, like in a sense of like when you would drink at other people. Like when I was a young cook and working at people's restaurants that I wasn't friends with the owners or like I didn't know. Like we were like, fuck these dudes, let's keep drinking these pints. And you always have these weird resentments of taking advantage of these restaurants. And being like, they fucking, I don't get paid well, or fucking, I'm working fucking 70, 80, 100 hour weeks. I'm going to drink fucking 25 pints tonight on the fucking restaurant's tab. Like, there's so many different variations of what creates, or what makes, glorifies, or what magnifies addicts, or whatever. And it's an outsider kind of thing. Like, you don't need a fucking, you don't need a degree. You don't need schooling. You don't need, all you gotta do is to be able to do your job. And there's not a lot, like, there is a lot of jobs like that, but it's like, it's not a lot of jobs where you can walk in there and start off as a dishwasher and be a fucking chef de cuisine within 5 years if you really fucking wanted it. You know? Because if whoever's the best chef in the room is probably going to be the chef de cuisine, you know? And it's like, you can start at the dishwasher. You can start at the lowest position, and then you'll be a garde manger, and then you have fucking, you know, doing prep or garde manger, and then you go and sauce it. Like, you know, you're a junior sous chef, and then you're whatever. And all of a sudden, you're a chef de cuisine. And I think, like, that is, like, a really amazing thing. But I think it's a lot of outsiders, a lot of in the kitchens at least. The front of house. I don't know. I think it's just about having that family too. You have that family. Everyone's dysfunctional. Everyone can, you know, it's like therapy after shifts, and you just like bitch and fucking smoke cigs and drink fucking Pernod or whatever the fuck you're doing. I don't know, man. It's just like it's a snake eating its own tail at the end of the day, man. Like it goes on forever, and it's different. Like it's not always this, and that's the thing. Like everyone always I'm like, what my story is and my experiences. I've only worked in fucking four kitchens in my life, like before before we opened restaurants. So it's like I only have perspective on myself, and like, but it seems that it's the case. And I don't know what it's like in big fine dining restaurants and crazy. There's a different abuse level in those kind of places. But like I know the mid-level bistros and like, you know, the kind of downtrodden line cook kind of life. You know, I never had a mentor, and I only had like chefs that I used to fucking resent and hate, and I never saw on the line. And that's why we would drink at restaurants and just be like, yo, fuck everyone. We're fucking drinking tonight. And we just do it every night.
You know, before you were talking about ego and how you had a massive ego, and thinking forward to like where you are now and all that you've accomplished, you've seen the world. You've seen a lot of it. You've gone to a lot of restaurants.
I say a little bit. I still haven't even been to Spain or Italy or...
Neither.
Yeah.
Let's go there together. But like...
Yeah, let's go.
If you could give one piece of advice to either your former self as like a young chef,
yeah,
or just to like young chefs that are out there right now, like what do you think the biggest struggle is from your perspective in relation to ego or just challenges as a chef?
I think it's about putting in time. I think a lot of I never wanted to be a chef. It definitely wasn't in like my game plan when I was ever anything. Like, there was no moment where I was like, I'm gonna be a chef when I grow up. And there was never a moment when I was going in cooking school being like, even when my chefs would be like, are you gonna be a fucking chef or a bricklayer? Like, we had this one German chef, Jürgen Lindner, Chef Lindner, and he would fucking always be like, you're fucking Black & Decker, you're fucking bricklayer, get the fuck out of here. And he was like this really harsh, amazing German chef. And still, he would say that, and I'd be like, well, fuck, I want to be a chef, not a fuck. Like, I would say it out of, like, spite, but, like, I'm like, as soon as I say it, I'd be like, do I want to be a chef? Like, because I was like, in cooking school, I was like, those are chefs. I'm like, I don't want to be like these dudes. Like, I didn't like really see myself being these like big European crazy chef dudes, you know? And like all my chefs in cooking school were like Scottish, Irish, British, and German. And they were all really intense. And I was like, I don't know if this is for me, man. I'm just like some punk kid. And I'm like, I'm trying to just go to college and live in a city so I can go see like punk shows. And I'm like, I don't fucking what. But I think the advice is the time. Like I was loyal to my restaurants when I figured out that I was like, okay, I need to do work. And like, this is the only job I can really want that I really want to do. So I think putting in the time, and I think everyone really, really wants to. Everyone wants to rise really quickly because it is hard work, and just because you can make a nice pate en croûte doesn't mean you can run a fucking restaurant, and just because you can cook really, really, really well doesn't mean that you can fucking run a restaurant. And I think that the biggest thing is. I think a lot of people understand what it takes to run a restaurant, but I don't really think people understand what it takes to run a fucking restaurant. And I think the biggest thing is to like learn how to fucking cook really well and probably take a few business courses, throw some business courses in there, really understand food costs and labor costs and fucking how to do proper inventory and like that kind of shit. And like, just because people are fucking hashtagging Swan Ye and you got a coon spoon doesn't mean you're fucking a chef. And it doesn't mean that, like, you know, like, even myself, like, I'm stoked. Like, we closed P&L Burger and I'm, like, stoked. And it's, like, it's not about every fucking W. It's about being able to sit back and be like, yeah, no, that didn't work. And okay with that. And that takes time and it takes, like... Like, I didn't leave, you know, P&L Burger, like, having that, like, sense of, like, yeah, that just didn't work. That's business. And, like, not letting it hurt. Like, it's not because I'm a fucking great chef. It's, like, the location didn't work. The fucking labor's harsh. Beef prices are crazy. It's, like, how do you sell something under $10 that caught, like, every time we sold a burger, I think we lost $3. You know? Like, it's a crazy thing, but it's, like... It just wasn't a good business. And I think, like, a lot of people don't understand, like, there's a lot of really good cooks out there that don't have fucking successful restaurants. And I think learn from those guys. Learn from the mistakes and, like, learn that... And to be loyal, too. Like, go... You will learn more if you stay at a restaurant longer than fucking 6 months. I'll tell you that much. Like, all these guys are running around getting all the resume. Their CV looks real great because they worked at fucking 25 restaurants. But it's like, I look at that and I'm like, you don't stay. Why would I hire you? You just want to come and learn one. You're coming here for one specific thing. You've taken the time to figure it out. What the one thing I'm on my menu is that you want to come and learn. And then you're going to come and learn it. And then you're going to fuck off. And it's like, that's what I see those people as, not parasites, because they are learning their craft. But it's like, go work somewhere for like 2 years. Go learn for 2 years. And then, like, why do you want to be a fucking chef? Like, you're trying to get on the Forbes 30 under 30 shit? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't understand these goals. And, like, I guess it's just kind of different goals. Because it's, like, all my shit just happened organically. And very kind of, like, I was just, like, falling over myself into every position I've gotten into. But it's, like, and now I'm 35. And it's, like, I've opened 5 places in, like, 6 years. And, you know... I've closed one, and that's okay. And I think that kids need to put in time and learn. I think fax machine. There's a fax machine. We're gonna fax. Someone is faxing the Munchies office right now. That fears. I'm fearless. Let's talk about fears real quick. I'm fearless.
All right, so if you were on a desert island, who is the celebrity that you invite to come to dinner? What are you eating? And what's the one piece of cooking equipment that you can't live without?
So I'm on a desert island and I have to invite a celebrity?
You don't have to. I mean, maybe it's just like someone that you want to hang out with besides your wife Trish, who's lovely because she's already there.
Max son, there. Matt,
yeah, he's there. Your whole family's there.
Who? Well, I don't know. It's a big question. Like, what do you do? Like, do you say something sincere? Do I say, is this the moment? You're like, I would love to invite my grandmother, who I never met, my dad's mom, you know, Nanny Matheson. I never met her. And when she passed away, we lived in Nova Scotia, and she passed away in Newfoundland. And she was a phenomenal cook. And when my dad was growing up, they had this... They had a farm with a meat, like a slaughterhouse and meat market on the farm. And she used to cook a ton of food and a lot of amazing meals. And my dad would always talk about them and still does. And I never got to experience any of that. And I think, like, I've cooked dinner for my grandfather, both my grandfathers and my grandmother. But I've never got to, like, cook a meal for, you know, my dad's mom. Maybe that. Is that nice? That's nice, right?
Oh, yeah. I approve of that.
And then I would make... get choked up here. The... what would I make? I don't know. See, then that's the thing. She's old school. She's old school. Make her, like, a Jigs dinner. Just make her a Jigs dinner? She wouldn't want that. She wouldn't want a Jigs dinner on a beach. I'd make her some, like, grill. Make a grill? I have a grill, and I would grill up some fresh seafood. You know, just grow some fresh seafood, sprinkle some, there'd probably be a tree with a pineapple, maybe, you know, cut up the pineapple, maybe salsa, some mango chutney with some shrimps. No, I don't know. I don't know what I'd cook. I don't know. There's not that thing. I like everything. There's too many options. You can't, like...
All right.
I'd like to hang with her, though. I'd like to hang with her on the beach and chill, and we could cook some food.
I want to ask food poisoning in general. You've traveled the world. You've had some food poisoning. What is just...
I've had food poisoning 3 times in my life. I don't count diarrhea as food poisoning because I have diarrhea all the time. I'm like, if I poo solid, then I'm kind of like, what's going on, you know? But... I don't even know. I ate at this sketchy Chinese spot when I was here last time for when I did the chef's club dinners. We went out and the last night and ate at some fucking Chinese restaurant. Me and Morgan, and I got back to my hotel room and I was like fucked. And then like we got back at like midnight. By like 1:30, I was like in the shower, like hurdled up like a victim on SVU or something, you know? Like, it was like, I was shook. And I was just like, what do I do? I was like, what the fuck's going on? And I wasn't like shitting and barfing. It was like, my body was like, I was like delirious. And like, I didn't know what was happening. I've never felt like it before. And then I got like, frozen. So I like went into the bed, and I brought I had like one of those like bubble jackets with the hoods, like a Patagonia bubble jacket with a hood. I put that on, and then I got in the blankets, and then I took a hair dryer and put a fucking hair dryer under the blankets and just heat it. And I couldn't stop shaking for hours. And I had so many moments where I'm like, do I call 911? I'm in America. I'm like, did I get traveler's insurance? Like, I'm like, I don't know what the fuck's going on. I'm like, fuck. And I thought, like, I never, ever have had something that, like, crushed me like that. And then I shit a bunch and, like, barfed a bunch. But it was, like, something that was insane. And that was somewhere in Chinatown. I forgot the place.
Did you call the restaurant the next day?
Did I call?
Yeah.
No. It's probably from like a weird chopsticks or fucking someone dripped chicken on my fucking Coca-Cola or something. You know, like I was thinking like it's always from like the weird thing. Like what's it from really? You know, someone dragging a box of fucking chickens over like a case of Coca-Colas and like that little chicken blood drips down through those cases, gets on the little lip of that Coca-Cola and you'd sip that Coca-Cola without that straw. Dance with the devil. But I don't know. Like, you never know. I don't fucking know. who knows, food poisoning. People that call and they're like, something happened. Like, I've been at some restaurants where I'm like, that's not good. You know, did you really have to age that beef for 175 fucking days? And like, it's room temp and it's like, what's going on here, my dudes? And there's some stuff which is like, especially with like chefs and fermentation now and like a bunch of stuff, like people are going buck. And I'm like, are you guys actual scientists or are you guys just like fucking doing shit? Like, where's your litmus test on this fucking goddamn cabbage? You know, what's going on here? Or like, why are you so knowledgeable? You read the fucking fermentation book and all of a sudden you're a fucking PhD on fucking what the fuck? Get out of here. You're going to get someone sick.
If you could get rid of a fad or anything in the restaurant world, what's like the one thing? Like, for me, it would be, I don't know, tweezers.
Tweezers? I don't give a fuck about tweezers. A lot of really great food is played with tweezers. I think people misusing things. People misusing Instagram. People misusing tweezers. People misusing fucking words. And like, there's such a facade in the world right now. And what is a chef? And what isn't a chef? And what the fuck? And why do people have followers? And why people don't have followers? And like, what, like Instagram food specifically, like driven restaurants or chefs, and I just think it's all fucking stupid. And I think the misuse of, people work really hard and use tweezers and their food's fucking amazing, then fucking use tweezers. But you got some fucking asshole plating fucking some stupid fucking microgreens on his fucking bullshit fucking dummy food that doesn't know how to fucking cook properly, and he's out there on Instagram fucking tweezering and doing something like that, and then you're just a fucking poser. And it's just like, I think and that's why I don't, like, I take the thing where I'm like, I don't care, don't call me a chef, I don't care. Am I in the restaurant every day? No, I'm not, but it's cool. And like, the chef thing to me is something not even of a dying breed or anything, but it's just like, it's just not me. I'm like, I'm in my own lane. I want to do TV. I want to do things. I want to do that. But, like, that's me. But, like, the fads, I don't know, man. Like, Instagram is, like, Instagram's changed shit. Instagram has completely changed shit. It's funny to think that, like, I opened Parts and Labor and there was an Instagram. Like, it's a crazy thing. Like, we didn't, like, what did we do? You'd never put up photos of food. Like, because then that would make you a foodie. And foodies were, like, losers. And now everyone's a fucking loser. Including myself, I'm the biggest loser. You know, like, that's the funny thing. Like, if you put up a photo of food fucking 5 years ago, you were a foodie. And, like, the term foodie back then meant something. And you were a fucking loser blogger looking for free food. Because you put a fucking 12 photos on Tumblr linked to your Facebook or something, you know? And it's like, and now it's just Instagram's fucked. Food's the biggest thing. Everyone wants content, you know? Munchies. Shout out. You guys put people on their heads. Everyone wants to be a munchie, you know? Like, it's changed. The world's changed, and I don't know. Is it better or worse? I don't know, but it's going. And it's going to keep going, so that's why I just want to just do my thing. I think that's the best thing. People just stay in your own lane, you know? Find the lane. People have to find the lane. It's some people, it's a little foggier than others. And then once you find that lane, just stay in your lane. Do what you do and be the best you, you know? A lot of posers out there, though. Shout out to all the posers. Shout out to all the posers, all the trolls. You know, people commenting, telling mean things. Why do people say mean things?
I don't know.
Right? That's the thing that I don't understand. That drives me up the wall. Trolling on a series, like... Like, why would you tell me on my Instagram that my kid looks like he's a fucking piece of shit or something? Like, people say stuff about, like, and it's like, I don't even give up. Like, I'm like, they're saying something about my family. Like, not even on that tip. It's like, who said something like that? Like, and you go look and it's like a troll. Like, it's like, they got, like, they have, like, 3 followers and they follow 700,000 people and they got, like, 6 posts and it's private. And you're like, what is that? There's just bots that harass people's children or food or, like, you know, I love it, man. Because everything's a target. Everything's so easy now, right? Like, every time, like, I put up a photo, I'm like, Every time I put up a photo, I almost have to troll it before. So then I'm like, okay, is it troll free? Like, so I like hold the photo and I'm like, I look at everything. I'm like, oh, fuck. Or I don't. Like, sometimes I just throw shit up. But it's like, if I put up like a food pic, I'm like, okay, what would I make fun of on this? Because everyone makes fun of everything. So I'm like, what would you make fun of on this? And then I look at it and I'm like, okay, no, it's good. And then I'll put it up. And then like 5 minutes later, I'm like, oh, fuck. Because I don't delete anything either. I think deleting photos is whack. It's like you kind of like, you made your bed with that post. You got to leave it up there, you know?
What?
Just like, rambling. This podcast is brought to you by rambling. Fucking who cares what the fuck I am saying? Fuck. Do you know what? Did I ever tell you the real story why I started yelling?
No.
Because I didn't think the microphones could hear me. Because like I was so far away on a horse. Like, the first time I think I really yelled was when I was, like, on a horse in Calgary. And I was just, like, yelling. Because I was, like, on the ridge of a mountain on a horse and being like, I needed to yell. And then I just started kind of doing it. Because I didn't think the microphones could hear me. That's the real reason why I started yelling. And then all of a sudden it turned into a thing, and now it's a thing. So now I yell, and now everyone loves or hates the yells. But they're still here.
Do they think it's real?
What?
Do people, like, think that you actually yell? Like, that's your normal inside voice?
Yes. People are like, what? You don't sound like... Do you want to hear the craziest story? I was fucking... Someone... I had, like, a fraudulent cell phone accounts. I had two cell phone numbers set up somehow with my shit. I got frauded, whatever. And I called my fucking cell phone company, and this kid was like... I was like... giving him my info, and I was like, yeah, my name's Maddie Matheson. And he was like, wait, what? And I was like, I was like, my name's Matthew Matheson. And he was just like, are you the cheeseburger guy? And I was just like, and it was like at 9 at night, and I was just like, yeah, I get, like, yeah, I am, but I'm calling you about someone fucking, I got $3,000 worth of cell phone bills on my goddamn fucking number. Calling about fraud, my dude. And he was just like, it doesn't sound like you. I don't believe that this is you. And I'm like, I'm calling about fraud right now, and you're fucking telling me that you don't believe that it's me, and some motherfucker can come up here and get cell phones, and you're telling the real guy that it's not? And he's like, well, it just doesn't sound like you. I'm like, I am fucking very upset. It's 9 at night, which is late for some reason now. I'm saying 9 at night like it's fucking 3 in the morning. I'm like, it is 9 at night. I'm a fucking 75-year-old fucking hen. And I'm like, and he couldn't believe it. He was like, I just don't believe it's you.
So what'd you do?
I didn't do anything. I told him to give me his fucking manager. Because I was just like, I need to figure this out. And I was just like, I don't give a... I was just like, dude. Like, he's like, it doesn't sound like you. I'm like, I'm not yelling. And I was like yelling at him, being like, it's fucking... I'm not yelling. Like, what do you want me to do? Fucking, it's me, it's Maddie. Like, why do I have to justify who I am? You have my fucking password. What's my mom's maiden name? I'll fucking tell you, motherfucker. You know? Like, I'm giving you the info. Give me your fucking manager, you piece of shit. Not really. He was a nice guy. But he was just like... That was funny, though. I was like, I'm calling about fraud. And this fucking kid is like, I don't believe it's you. I'm like, why the fuck don't... Who can't... Okay, it's not me. It's not... Okay, sorry. I made a mistake. I'm not Maddie Matheson. Can I still please speak to your manager and figure out why someone has $3,000 worth of cell phone bills on my bill? Fucker. Take that back, Kelly.
So, Kelly.
Kelly Holliman?
This is Kelly Holliman.
Helly. If you guys ever meet this beautiful, strong, intelligent, caring... just perfect. A star. A human star. Her name is Helen Holliman. It's not Helly Holliman, and it's not Holly Holliman. Her name is Helen, and she's from Texas, and she's amazing. So get her name straight, freaks.
Aw, thanks. Thanks, buddy.
That was for you.
Thank you.
I know you've wanted to say it publicly on your podcast for quite some time. Well, I'm Maddie Matheson, And I just did a beautiful podcast, powerful podcast with Helen Holliman and Phil Domachowski. Shout out to Phil and all the Polish people out there. Goddamn love you. This podcast will be the best one that's ever happened because you know what? Your big boy's down here doing his thing. This one goes out to all the big dogs. Keep smelling around those butts, guys. You're going to find something that works one day. God bless America. And it's Helen Holliman, not Holly Holliman. Act right. Bye!
Describe that stale cookie that you just ate. How would you articulate that?
It was kind of crumbly. See, this is the thing. It's you need to be a thesaurus of words. And it's more about, like, that cookie was, like, chewing on, like if you had, like, a little bag full of sand, like a little kind of chewy bag of sand, and then had, like, little chocolate chunks in it. And the bag broke after you gnawed on it, soaked it up a little bit, and so it was kind of moist sand, kind of crispy, crunchy sand. It was kind of like a crumbly, dry sandbag full of cookie crumbs and chocolate chunks. So that's kind of how you get to where you need to be on television.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.